I like to say networking is about turning business contacts into professional friendships. And you don't make friends by just taking and taking and taking. You've got to give a little bit too.
This is Chan with The Plan, the podcast, a podcast providing career advice and easy, actionable steps for frustrated professionals, helping you overcome career challenges so you stop feeling confused and defeated and start feeling focused and confident in order to excel in your career. I'm your host, Max Chan. Now let's dive into the episode. Hey, Steph, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
How's your week so far?
You know, it's going pretty good. Can't complain. Weather's getting nicer, so trying to get outside a little bit more. And that always, you know, turns a frown upside down, especially in the when the weather's not been very fun.
Yeah, like I'm in Toronto, right? So we had like one of the warmest days so far this year yesterday, and I was driving and like everybody's on the patio. So everyone's just tired of being balled up in the house during the winter months. With the first day of like warm weather, people are taking advantage of it.
Absolutely.
I want you to come on my podcast because as a career coach myself, probably have a pulse on the current job market. And I don't know what's going on with your clients and the professionals you talk to, but a lot of the professionals that I talk to are saying that it's a tough market out there. They're not getting a lot of responses on their applications. So before we dive any further, what are you hearing in the first few months of 2024 in regards to the current job market?
I work with a lot of applicants that are targeting, you know, tech roles, mid-management up to, I would say, C-level executives, and everyone's saying the same thing. You know, I just can't get any response from my applications. I don't know if it's my resume. I don't know if it's my LinkedIn. I don't know if it's my experience, a skills gap. I don't know what it is. And the funny thing is it's just that much competition. And there's a lot happening behind the scenes on recruiting teams that people don't really know what's going on with companies. The recruiters have often are given, you know, the red stop sign saying, you know, we need to put a pause on this, or we need to, you know, take a step back instead of hiring. And so there's a lot of elements, but mostly it's that competition and then what's going on behind the scenes that they just don't know about.
So for someone who is unaware as a job seeker that's frustrated that they're not getting any response, not even a rejection, what are some of the common things that are going behind the scenes that they might not be aware of?
Well, I think that what tends to happen throughout the year, this isn't just at the end of the year, but throughout the year, is you get hiring needs that come up and then the recruiting process starts, but then trajectories within the company are changing, priorities are shifting. So instead of channeling funds towards, you know, building teams or scaling teams, they need to start channeling those funds into other areas of the business. And what that can do is really put, you know, recruiters on, you know, a standstill. They can't fill these roles. They can't even move forward with interviews because, you know, the priorities have changed. So I know that's a big one that's happening behind the scenes throughout the year, not just at any one particular time of year. Because I know we often hear, you know, at the end of the year, you know, the budget's out. Well, they're going to ramp up hiring the first of the year. That's true, but this happens throughout the year. I think another thing I'm really thinking is a possibility, and I don't really have any data to support this, but what I think is also happening is there is just this ghosting that has happened on both sides, and there's just less of a desire to build that connection with an applicant, and they're just going for speed. They're just going for, you know, time to fill and trying to get someone in that role as quickly as possible without that human connection happening. And a lot of it's automated. A lot of it's AI. And a lot of it is kind of causing job seekers who think, you know, I'm trying to market myself as a person. Why am I not hearing from a person? It's causing a lot of frustration.
One of the big frustrations that I've heard is the one-way video interviews where you basically click on a link and you have to record yourself answering questions. And that's very, I'm not sure if that's the right term, inhuman or lack of human connection. And a lot of job seekers are frustrated with that because they want to talk to a person. That's the purpose of like applying to jobs. But what's your take on that in terms of, like, as you said, like with AI automation, it's getting harder and harder to reach a person during the job search process?
Well, I always believe that an interview should be a two-way conversation. It should never be, you know, this just answer my question and move on. You know, job seekers need to ask questions. They need to make sure it's going to be a good fit for them. And to not be given that opportunity, to not be able to gauge, you know, an interviewer's body language or, even their attitude towards the company itself, you're really disservicing, you know, job seekers, because they might fit that bill for that role, but once they get in, they're going to be miserable because they don't align with the culture, they don't align with the values, they didn't know, you know, the human side of, you know, what it's like to work there, because they didn't have that discourse in the interview process.
You were also talking about competition, right? The competition has been heightened. Why is that? You said that you do work with a lot of people in the tech space. There has been a lot of tech layoffs, so there's a influx of talent. Is that one of the reasons? And if so, what are some additional reasons on top of that?
That's definitely a huge reason. There's just beyond layoffs, though, I think the rise of remote work and the rise in desire for remote work has created a whole new wave of competition, especially when there's still applicants that like to do the spray and pray method of applying for any and everything. And they're just throwing their resume out. So the competition, the number of applicants that recruiters even have to go through, I think is another reason why they're pushing so much for this automation and AI within their hiring processes, because they just don't have the bandwidth to even work through that competition. I do think that layoffs are a huge concern, especially in the tech field, but I think having, you know, global applicants, there's quite a few even US residents that want to live abroad and work abroad. And so just having the option to work remote and work for any company. And now I think applicants are starting to feel like they have the power to negotiate that into their job offer, even if it wasn't initially going to be a remote role. I feel like they're starting to feel like they can negotiate that almost like it's a perk or a benefit.
The other thing I want to touch on in terms of the tech space is someone who works at the big tech, the big four or five. One of the issues that they are experiencing right now is the huge pay cut that they have to take. I knew someone that was talking to that worked at Amazon, and I think they were making like 200K plus, and then they're applying to other jobs now and there's a lot less. And some of these recruiters are wary of taking them on in the interview process because they are taking a huge pay cut. So when the economy gets better, they might be seen as a flight risk and want to jump ship. So what do you recommend in that regard, where during the tech boom, let's say 2020 to 2022, due to like COVID, a lot of companies were hiring in the tech space, but now it's been retracted a bit. What do you recommend in terms of combating that assumption that you are going to be a flight risk because you're taking a pay cut?
One of the strategies I encourage many of my job seekers that I work with to take is really embrace your last 10 years and don't hold on so tightly to the older experience. And I think as resume writers and career coaches, we used to say, you know, 15 years, like don't go beyond 15 years. I'm starting to say, no, focus on your last 10 years because tech has changed so much just in the last 5 years and best practices have been changing. There's so much that even 15 years ago doesn't apply anymore. And so if you're holding on to those years, whether on your resume, on your LinkedIn profile, in your interview answers, if you're holding on to that, you're giving the impression you're not that forward-thinking professional that they want to see brought into a company. And I think quite a few job seekers are really struggling with that, especially when they're not thinking in terms of, you know, not just outdated tech, but outdated methodologies, outdated best practices, outdated tools. 10 to 15 years is just too much of a gap now, especially with even what's come out in the last few years.
Yeah, like in terms of what you said, like a lot of the more senior professionals, they might have like 20, 25. I always recommend like keep it to 2 pages, 15 years. But now you're even saying 10 years because tech has changed so much that when you're doing these interviews and you're referencing a lot of your older experiences, as you said, like they might think that this person is not being adaptable in the new modern workplace.
And I also tell my clients that I work with in this situation, especially if I've trimmed, you know, over half of their career from their documents or their marketing materials, you know, you have to think in terms of who might be hiring you. And is that older experience going to indicate that you expect a higher salary than maybe a candidate that only is focusing on the last 10 years? Are you going to imply that you're going to be difficult to manage because you have all this experience that you're really, really proud of and you want to showcase, maybe who you're reporting to is not going to have that much experience. Is that going to make them not want to manage you? You know, there's so many different elements to think of beyond just, you know, flight risk. Are they going to, you know, go off and find another job that's a better fit? If you really want the job and you want to get in and you want to negotiate a higher salary in the next 6 months to a year, you're going to have to think of your background in a different perspective. It's not about the whole biography. It's about that synopsis, that last 10 years that is going to make the difference.
Yeah. And going back to the AI portion that you discussed, in terms of like an influx of applicants, there's so many applicants for these jobs now because of like improved technologies. For example, like LinkedIn, you have the easy apply, the one click apply. You have these autofill plugins where you can fill in your information really, really quickly. And now there's the AI tools that can apply for you. So that is going to definitely like influx the amount of applicants for each role. With that being said, how do you make your resume stand out? Because you, as a career coach yourself, you've written a lot of resumes for people. You've reviewed a lot of resumes. So why aren't these resumes being screened in for an interview when they believe that they have the skills to do the job?
Well, I just gave a presentation not too long ago with JobScan. You know, I take a lot of my advice from recruiters specifically because I want to make sure I'm sharing actionable advice that is going to matter and that is actually going to work based on what's happening behind the scenes. And a couple of the recruiters I talked to said very, you know, unanimously, you can't really show interest in the job if you're not willing to tailor your resume or your LinkedIn profile or your job search for that job. We talk about tailoring and targeting a resume, you know, all the time, and it doesn't quite resonate with all these job seekers that are hearing it always because they're thinking, well, it's more about a numbers game. It's not. It's more about how do you position yourself as the best fit for that job? If you're plugging the same information into every single application and you're using the same resume or the same resume information for every application, you're not going to position yourself as the best fit for anybody because you're just generalizing everything that is marketable about you when, you know, it used to be a generalist was preferred over a specialist because they could wear many hats, they can do all these things, but now they want that specialist. They want that person who can figure out how to solve the specific problem that that role is meant to resolve.
Going back to the tailoring, right? So I'm assuming like both of us as career coach slash resume writers, we always like look at different keywords you want to insert, but what other additional like tailoring components should you add? Like you talk about like interest in the job, like how could you show interest of the job in the resume, or is that more fit for the cover letter?
I could go off on a tangent on this one. I actually do a different approach with cover letters where it's not about how you're a fit for the job, but how you're a fit for the company as a whole or that team. And I definitely take a slightly different approach so that it's adding, not just repeating what's already on your resume. So that's a whole different type of targeting that I think is really effective. And what hiring managers want to see at that stage is that, you know, you've done your research, you know exactly what the values, the mission and vision of the organization is and why that aligns with your career goals. But as far as tailoring a resume, the tips that can actually show your genuine interest in the role, start with your resume title. You know, instead of starting it with summary, instead of starting it with qualifications or profile, title your resume the title of the job that you're applying for. Show that you are actually writing a resume for that particular job. That's a very easy way to not only add in the job title if you've never held it before, and that could be used as a keyword in searches, but it shows that tailoring this resume is for this job. Now, another thing that I really promote is making sure that your skills section is brief. And what I mean by brief is it needs to be easy to skim, obviously, but it should really only showcase the top, I don't know, 8 to 10 max functional job-related skills and experiences. Those are the keywords that need to be there. And it's not just for ATS. It's also for the recruiters doing that quick initial few second skim. And they need to know that you have the experience. And if they're doing that quick skim, looking for those keywords, and you have a huge skills section, you're not going to make it easy for them to find what they're looking for in those first initial seconds.
A lot of people abuse the skills section. Like they'll have like 20 or like this might be too far of a stretch, but it could be like 20 or 30 keywords, right? And some of them are like soft skills, like communication, problem solving, which is not really relevant. How do you make a good skills section where it tells a good story, but you're not like overdoing it and trying to game the system?
I've taken a couple different approaches. I work with a lot of career changers who maybe don't have, you know, all 8 or 10 of those top functional skills. So I'll just select a few, maybe 3 or 4, and put a little bullet underneath that branding statement or summary that showcases those particular skills. Instead of having that keyword bank that they can easily skim, they're going to be uncomfortable adding keywords that they can't, you know, actually back up in their experience section that, yes, I have experience in this. So that's one way I've done that. But another way is, again, that skill section can be an easy to skim, just keyword bank. But making sure that you always have an example throughout your resume that backs up that skill set. I use the term branding statement instead of a resume summary, because just summarizing your skills and experience, that's your resume's job. You don't need to do that again in that summary. So, you know, I say brand yourself. Indicate that you understand and can meet the goals of that role. And sometimes adding in the keywords there to help tell that story that you're utilizing these skill sets to achieve this outcome in past experiences, that's a good way to start your resume, where you're helping connect the dots, but you're using those keywords more strategically in a way that is going to help you stand out.
And speaking of keywords, we can't talk about keywords without talking about the ATS, applicant tracking system. A lot of professionals don't understand it. They think it's a screening software where recruiters don't look at it. So how it works is, in their opinion, is like they submit their resume into the ATS. The ATS does all the filtering and scanning, and whatever passes the ATS gets sent to the recruiter, and then the recruiter reviews it. That's the perception of what an ATS is. Like, it's these scary robots that screen the resume for the recruiter, and then the recruiter finally looks at it once they approve it. So what tends to happen is they use these like resume optimizers, or they stuff a whole bunch of keywords hoping it passes without telling a proper story. So what's the truth? Like, what's the actual insight information in terms of what an ATS actually does?
ATS is a digital filing cabinet. It is a database that can be used to organize applications and preview them without having to download every single document. It's not this scary bot-driven tool that is eliminating applicants. If anything, you know, I know some recruiters like to add into the application part itself some knockout questions. That might be the only factor of eliminating you from consideration. You know, if they say, do you have at least 7 years of experience in X, Y, and Z? And you say no, well, that was required for the job. You're no longer eligible. But your resume itself is not getting eliminated based on what it has or has not within it. So what ends up happening is you upload your document is scanned by the software. The software takes the information that it finds, it puts that into essentially a profile for you within that software. And that profile is actually being built not just on your resume. If you include your LinkedIn profile, many ATS will pull from there. I'm trying to think, what was the other one I saw? It was pulling information from some other profile. I can't remember off the top of my head what I was seeing in a demo, but it's building this profile that is then stored in that ATS. And a recruiter can go and search, sort, and filter using keywords. So it's not automated. It's them saying, I want to make sure the resumes I look for have this specific qualification or this specific certification, this specific keyword. And from there, it just narrows it down. It's a filing cabinet and they can go in and look. Now, some applicant tracking systems do have the ranking feature where it's ranking you against others. It'll kind of give you like a match score, or it'll give you a rating kind of score. Not all of them do this. And I don't even think recruiters pay that much attention to them. I actually heard, this was years ago, I don't know if this is relevant now, but years ago, someone said, if I see a match score that's over 80%, I don't even look at the resume because I feel like they've probably just populated it with a bunch of keywords instead of actually telling me their true story for their career, you know, background and everything. And so it's funny when you see, you know, resume optimization tools saying you need to have over 70% or over 80% match. It's like, I wouldn't.
So speaking of that, so let's say the recruiter is like going through the resumes the ATS has organized for them. As a lot of articles state, they take like 6 to 10 seconds to look at the resume. So what are they looking for? Because like, you can't really do much in 6 to 10 seconds. So is there a specific like key phrases they're looking for? They're looking for like keywords, they're looking for like job titles. Like what is the thing that they're looking for to quickly tell if the person is qualified for the job, or at least qualified to move forward in the process?
I think they typically do start with that top half of your resume's first page. I can't speak for every ATS, but I know some ATS has, you know, a resume preview window where you can view the resume directly in the ATS. And they're going to see that top half. So if your top half of your resume's first page has that resume title, that specific job title you're applying for, it has a keyword bank of those quick keywords that they're looking for, that's going to stand out right away and say, okay, now let's look at their experience. When they look through the experience, they're going to go very quickly to look at position titles and dates. They're going to look at what level you've worked at. Is that going to be relevant for this role? And they're also looking at your work history timeline, making sure there's no like significant gaps that cause concern. And when I say significant, I'm not talking a few months or even lately a few years. I mean, significant 10-year gap or something like that, that requires some explanation. And then they look at bullets because obviously the eye is drawn to bullets. I am a strong advocate for not using only bullets in your experience section. There should be a paragraph summary for deeper reading and additional keywords, but use those bullets to showcase what separates you from others with similar skills and experience, meaning those achievements, those outcomes that you've generated that are going to help you separate yourself from someone else who's also qualified. And that's going to help them very quickly assess, okay, I want to do a deeper read. I want to find out more. I want to contact this person, schedule an interview. It's going to help them do their job so much faster. They'll appreciate you for it.
Yeah, like you make a good point. There is a debate whether, obviously I don't recommend just doing a paragraph. I have seen some old school resumes where it's just a paragraph with the experience like above. The standard format is usually just bullet points. Some people do add the additional paragraph. So what would you write in the paragraph that would not be repetitive in your bullet points?
So my bullets are typically very much so achievements. They're measurable outcomes as often as I can make them measurable with those numbers. And I want to say I've taken a couple different approaches with the paragraph summaries, and they're short. They're no more than, you know, four lines typically. Sometimes with my executive clients, I will give a little bit more context, but essentially giving some detail as to the scope of the work. So adding in some of those keywords that are necessary without just focusing on responsibilities. And how I have been able to do that is, again, keeping it very outcome oriented, very goal oriented. So instead of saying I was responsible for X, Y, and Z, why did those things matter? You know, for example, I just finished a first draft for a client who is applying for, you know, director level and higher product roles. And he's been in product roles forever, product management, development, software development. And so I wanted to show the progression of his career with those short paragraphs. So early on in his experience, it's going to start talking more about the projects he managed and was he able to deliver them on time and on budget. And then as we move up in his level of experience, we needed to show the scope. And as head of engineering and product development, he was guiding product strategy. He was responsible for deliverables of products to market. You know, it was a much higher scope. And so we were able to kind of show that career progression beyond those achievement bullets. And again, I say no more than four to six max, six lines max for these paragraphs, and only if it's relevant to the job you're applying for.
And then the last thing I want to touch upon is the insights into AI. We briefly talked about this earlier on to like streamline the application process because a lot of employers get inundated with a lot of applications. So in your opinion, what's happening right now in the recruitment world in terms of AI and where do you see it heading into the future?
One of the things I watch very closely is LinkedIn. LinkedIn likes to be the front runner in a lot of new hiring tech. And what I'm referring to is it's been using automation and AI for years. It's not new to LinkedIn. And so being able to see, you know, how they're using it, I do like the interview practice opportunities that AI can present. I actually was introduced to a tool. I can't remember it off the top of my head, but it's marketing for interview prep, but also for public speaking. And the AI will give you tips on how to better present yourself. You're just recording videos of yourself and then it's giving you those tips. So, you know, there are some really cool tools coming out that will help not only the recruiters, but also the job seekers. I will say the nice thing about AI is it's actually going to make it easier for job seekers to be seen because it's going to recognize messages, not just keywords. It's going to start saying, okay, this person uses this phrasing that relates to this skill, even though they don't have that skill listed. It's, I don't want to say predictive, but that's where it's going. It's starting to make assumptions and it's going to make it easier for applicants to be seen by recruiters for that reason. Now, where it's not going to help recruiters, I think, is there are some ATS that are starting to use AI to scrap information from other sources, whether that's your LinkedIn profile or other social media profiles. And it's going to start making assumptions about whether or not you will be a good cultural fit based on your activity, your interests, what you talk about. And it's going to be looking at things outside of your resume. It's going to be looking at things that you put out there as part of your digital footprint. So I think it's really important for job seekers to start branding themselves and think of their online usage, not just for entertainment, but for career development as well. So, you know, sharing insights, being thoughtful about what they're putting out as part of their digital footprint is going to become extremely important in the coming years.
To add to that, what are some job search strategies besides just applying online right now to like help you stand out and be competitive in the marketplace?
I am a huge advocate for what I call employer targeting. So it's basically not starting your job search based on job titles, but what companies do you want to work for? What sort of departments do you want to target? And then networking specifically with the employees who work at that company, whether that's using LinkedIn. LinkedIn makes it super easy. There are certain online communities outside of LinkedIn that might give you an opportunity to do that. There's also industry or professional associations that have amazing networking opportunities, but also really help you extend your reach into your targeted field or industry, whether that's finding a mentor or just finding out which companies you might want to work for, or you know what kind of career path is in store for you depending on the roles that you take. And I think that what's going to be really important is networking to add that human element back in. And that's going to look like reaching out to recruiters, reaching out to the employees who work at those companies, and starting conversations that are not self-serving, but mutually beneficial, and letting people know, you know, I like what you post. It's really insightful. I want to learn more. And leveraging those connections in that way where you can, you know, provide support for them as well, or, you know, just making it more mutual, not just, hi, I want to work for this company. Can you tell me who to reach out to? You know, don't make it self-serving. It's got to be a cultivated relationship that you are building. I like to say networking is about turning business contacts into professional friendships. And you don't make friends by just taking and taking and taking. You've got to give a little bit too.
And for someone who is new to networking, let's say, for example, like they're used to applying online, they're frustrated with the process and they want to network, but they don't know how to go about it. They don't know how to like cold outreach to people on LinkedIn or email them at the company if they know their email. What are some like best practices to get the nervousness out of networking for the first time?
I would say start by sleuthing a little bit. You know, you can look at their profile, look at their activity, engage with them in comments. You know, I think there's some confidence behind a screen where you can just add comments, add your opinions, your insights, ask questions, but take a look at what they're posting and engage with that first, because that doesn't feel like networking. It is, but it doesn't feel like it. And then once you start, you know, earning that confidence to maybe private message and ask more specific questions or to dive deeper into a conversation or ask questions about the company they work at, you know, that's where the real networking magic happens, but it can take time. And that's why I say, you know, if you can find a professional or trade association that is relevant for your field or industry, join it. It is such a resource, not just for networking, but for education, for support. You know, I joined the National Resume Writers Association years ago, and I love their Facebook group because it's extremely supportive. You will find the occasional, you know, complaint about a client just for solidarity, but ultimately it's extremely uplifting and beneficial. And, you know, we refer people to each other. You know, we refer clients if we're too busy to each other. And so it feels more like a community of colleagues, which is what networking is about, instead of a group full of competitors. So having that is really helpful, not just in a job search, but just ongoing career development.
So for someone who is going into job search for the first time in years, how do they stand out in this competitive market?
Educate yourself. Start following, especially on LinkedIn, sometimes on Facebook, although I feel like Facebook's kind of, you know, taking the wayside a little bit. Find some people that are in recruiting, that are in the hiring space, and follow them and see what they're posting. See what they're talking about as far as, you know, what they want to see, what they don't want to see. Or follow other professionals like career coaches, resume writers, those who are up to date on the hiring trends and technologies because of their connections with these recruiting and hiring professionals. I think that educating yourself is the best thing you can do. Understanding how these tools work so that you can make them work to your advantage is extremely important to be seen and to get your name out there. And just understanding that, you know, especially for someone who hasn't been in the job market for a long time, you know, what you do day to day, it matters. You wouldn't have held that job if you didn't have some sort of impact on a grander scale. So you can't just disregard the background that you have saying, well, that's just what I did day to day. How is that an achievement? How is that an outcome? Like you have to look at your experience as this is what I brought to the table. This is the value I offer. And that is going to help you stand out so much more than just saying, well, I have years of experience and skills. Well, so do a lot of people. That's going to help, you know, someone who hasn't been in a job search for a very long time stand out and actually see some results.
As you already touched upon it, it goes back to the mindset, right? But like, well, like I'm doing this day to day for like 10 years. What makes it so special? So that could be one thing that holds people back in terms of like the mindset shift of like what they do and how it's really important. Like you were there for 10 years for a reason. What are some other like things that are holding people back in their job search?
There's a very strong negative connotation around achievements. I already briefly touched on this already with that mindset, but you know, there's this attitude of, well, I don't want to brag. I don't want to sound arrogant. Well, if you're sticking to the facts, facts are facts. If that's what you did, if that's what you achieved, you should be proud of that. And you should showcase that. You shouldn't hide things on your resume just because you're afraid it's going to sound, you know, like you're trying to boast about something. I've worked with clients where they omitted so many juicy details from their resume because they're like, well, I didn't think that's what they wanted to see. How else are they going to separate you from someone else who's equally qualified? Those are the details that help you stand out. And being able to determine what an accomplishment is or what a major contribution is, to be able to showcase that. It takes time. It takes practice. You don't do it necessarily correctly overnight. It does take some practice. So that is something that is a mindset shift I work with a ton of my clients on. You know, I work with some military transition clients. They're also the ones that don't necessarily want to take credit. They want to credit the team. They want to credit the group, but they don't want to credit themselves. And I see that with a handful of leaders in the workforce too. They want to showcase that it was their team's accomplishment. But, you know, if you can't claim it for yourself, it's not going to help you.
And to wrap up our conversation, Steph, like this is not a sales pitch, but like what's the benefit of hiring you as a resume writer to write your resume compared to like doing it yourself or like using a ChatGPT or some resume software that will write the bullet points for you?
I actually have played around with ChatGPT and it's not the worst thing for building a resume if you do it correctly, if you ask prompts a certain way and you're not just saying, here's my resume, rewrite it. I think it's a great tool for starting off with like a broadly targeted master resume. I think it can help you kind of formulate some information from scratch. But what a resume writer like myself can do for job seekers is look at your background from a different perspective. You know, we're often so attached to our experiences, it's very hard to think objectively and strategically around them. I know I would hire a resume writer if I wanted to go out and find a corporate job. I am way too attached to what I do day to day. It would be very difficult for me to figure out what exactly a recruiter would want to see, especially the first time going into it. I am also the type of resume writer who educates the heck out of my clients. So by the end of working with me, you get a video where I show you exactly what to look for in a job posting, how to integrate that into your resume, and you have access to that recording forever. So you can always go back and, you know, rewatch it and figure out, okay, so this is how I take what you worked on with me and how I just very quickly edit it for this one job. Having resources and tools like that will always help you have a little bit more of an advantage in the job search than someone who's just going to use AI or tools that don't have a human element to them.
So if people want to get ahead of their competition and want to work with you, how can they contact you to learn more about what you do and how you can help them?
Absolutely. My website is offtheclockresumes.com. I have a wide range of products, courses, templates, worksheets, as well as my services that I offer. So for those who maybe don't want to work one-on-one with me right now, I have quite a few tools that I've created to help with different areas of resume writing and LinkedIn networking that hopefully will be at least a starting point to getting more information and empowering yourself with the information that will actually help you see the results you want in your job search.
Great. Again, appreciate the time, Steph, and best of luck to all the professionals out there looking for their next job this year. Thank you so much for listening. And if you found this content valuable, here's three ways I can help you achieve your career goals for free. First, subscribe to this podcast as I post 2 episodes a week. Number 2, leave a 5-star review as this helps build the credibility of the show so we can gain access to more influential people to interview and bring those lessons to you to help elevate your career. And number 3, connect with me on social media. There's a link in the show notes for you to click on that compiles all my active social media accounts, making it easy for you to find me and connect with me. Thank you again for listening, and until next time. We'll be right back.